Also, loud sounds like a sonic boom and a horrible smell can kill you as well.
Oh, well, yeah, we all know that. Yeah. I mean, or you feel like you're dying.
Is this silent but deadly?
Yeah.
It's true. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So this is Hey Boo Know It.
Ooh.
8 or 9.
Oh my God.
Or 10.
Wow, we have been
we've been
recording Hey Boo Know It
for quite some time now.
Yeah.
So I just want to kick off first with, you know, because we're talking about scary stories. This is like an extended version of Tales from Dirt Campfire. All tales, all dirt time.
Oh, yes. And all about Halloween and scary stuff. Yeah.
So I did a little research here on the internet to find out what Americans are most afraid of.
Oh, that's a good one. What are the
fears? So what would you guess the number one fear of Americans?
I think public speaking, right?
It says here, corruption of government officials. That's people's number one fear.
Wow.
Is that they're afraid that their politicians are corrupt. And there's nothing to be afraid of. They are.
Yeah. That's happening.
It's happening. The second thing was cyber terrorism.
That's a big one.
That's something I'm not really concerned about. I figure, hey, if you want to get into my little bank account and take those $5 out, fine. Go ahead. You know what I mean? Like, great.
If you can do it, there's your reward.
Like, if you can find one of my credit cards that hasn't been run up all the way and you want to charge something, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck, because they're not going to take it at Walmart.
Yeah.
And they're going to call me and be like, you know that this thing is maxed.
This was declined.
You know, why do you even have it? Yeah. Why do you even have it?
Why do you even leave the house with it in there?
Yeah, you know it's useless.
Yeah.
Corporate tracking of personal information. That's happening.
Yeah, it's all happening.
I don't know what's to be afraid of. Like, they know I've maxed out all my credit cards and I bought shoes.
Yeah.
And they know I go to, fast food restaurants like twice a week. Terrorist attacks. Okay, again, these aren't really happening that often in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Government tracking of personal information. Well, that's happening. Bio warfare.
Yeah, right?
That's something I didn't even think about. Like, someone said, what are you scared of? It's like, I don't know, I'm going to miss the train. Not bio warfare.
Yeah, like releasing some kind of agent into the air and everybody gets sick. Yeah.
Identity theft.
That's a nightmare. That's just untangling that kind of thing.
Yes. I'm lucky it hasn't happened to me, but I've had some friends who have had their identity stolen, and it's taken them months and months and months to clear it up. Maybe it's a little easier now, but this is like back in the day when people physically had your credit cards and all that kind of stuff, where it was less online. It was more like they're masquerading as you. Economic collapse.
Yeah.
Running out of money in the future. Well, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And credit card fraud. That's also going to happen. So these are people's number one fears.
And they're all happening because it's such a...
Except for the bio warfare. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, eating shitty. I guess we're like poisoning ourselves. But it says, interestingly, the research found that half of all Americans believe in the paranormal.
Okay.
And 40% believe that places are haunted by spirits. And 25% of the people believe that the living and dead can communicate with one another.
Okay.
So it's interesting. So it's half of people believe in paranormal, but only a quarter of them say, hey, you can talk to dead people.
Okay.
So
it's interesting. It's some people, I was talking to people at a party last night, and people were saying, yeah, there is paranormal, but I don't believe in ghosts.
So what do they believe in?
That there is some kind of different energy out there that comes from somewhere, but it's not people.
Okay. Is that paranormal?
Yeah.
I tend to think of, like, ghosts and spirits and things, but they're just talking about, like, the universe?
Yeah, but just, like, not universal, like a god or a higher power or something like that, but they believe that there's some other energy swirling around.
And what's
that
it doing? Form.
It's
Was
like
it at the party?
Weird stuff happens. I don't know.
It ate all the dip? And it said that 20% of people reported that aliens visited the Earth in the past.
Oh,
so they believe that aliens were here.
All right, and they're gone.
Not now, they're gone.
They effed off.
Yeah, they came in the 50s and they're like, screw this. And then 20% of people believe that dreams can predict the future.
there are, don't you believe that some people can have like a kind of a,
like premonitions about things? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think anything is possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, I'm not offended by the idea. I'm like, that's ridiculous. You know, Pish tosh. Yeah. So this is what people's fears are. I thought for sure other things would be on, like Bigfoot. Didn't get on here.
No, nobody's afraid of Bigfoot
anymore. Wendigo, any of that kind of stuff. Like, no one's afraid. So, half of all people believe in the paranormal, but they're not terrified by it in any way. They just think it's kind of, like, banal. It's also there.
I see.
You know. All right, what do you have?
Well, I was talking to people at the party last night. I said, well, I'm going to be recording this show tomorrow. And
I don't have any material.
Who's got a good ghost story?
Okay.
And it was interesting to see the types of people respond in the way that they did. And
did anyone flee the room?
Nobody fled the room. Everybody got really quiet during everybody's stories.
So it turned into a ghost storytelling party.
But one woman, and I do want to have her on the show, was telling a story. She's from Mississippi.
Okay.
And she was saying, out in rural Mississippi, there's not a lot to do. So as a teenager...
Is there an urban Mississippi? I'm sorry. That's probably a rude... question, but I mean, I don't think of it as a hotbed of, like, metropolis.
There's not a lot to do. And so staying out of trouble with drugs and alcohol and things like that, a lot of people go ghost hunting. And they say that out there, it's like ripe with history and paranormal activity, supposedly.
Okay.
The story is like with the Mississippi River, it's like kind of like it was a one-way travel avenue. So what people would do, and you know, years and years ago, that when they would trade, they would get a boat and put all their stuff on the boat, sail down the river, go and sell everything, make their money, have their money, but they'd have to go back up to where they came from. So they went on they would get a horse and then ride these trails back up that ran along parallel to the river to go back home.
Oh, so the river flows that swiftly that you can only go in one direction.
You go in one direction, and then you have to go by horse the other way up. So a lot of people knew this, that people would have a lot of money, and they would be traveling on horse going back. So that's where you got a lot of those highway robbers.
Okay.
That would...
They're just waiting at the bottom of the river, like, here we go.
At this big stretch. It's like 444 miles, she was saying, this big stretch. And so all these, they would be hiding alongside, and then they would pounce, and they would kill you or rob you, the whole thing. And she said a lot of people died on this particular stretch of road.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, because of this. And it happened a lot. Yeah, there was a lot going on there. So
I'd probably just stay at the end. Be like, screw it. It was one time.
I'm going to live here.
One trip.
Yeah. I'm moving.
I'm closing up shop. I'm done.
So she said that she and her friends got their paranormal equipment together, which is really just not digital recording equipment, but the analog, right?
Okay.
Just a tape recorder and...
So they're old school.
Traditional
ghost hunting.
Because they said it's better to record that way because digital doesn't really pick up well with ghosts.
Okay.
And ghost voices and things. Right. It's easier for them to get in the other way.
It's like a Memorex tape.
Yeah.
Is better.
Yes. So she's a, you know, teenager and they are out and they just are all recording as they're walking and asking questions and... they're out there walking around and everything, and they didn't see anything at all or hear anything. But then when they were done and they were listening to the tapes...
It was Rob Bass. In the background.
She said that she was kind of lagging behind the group, which you'd never want to do.
Has she never seen a film?
I know.
You want to be in the center of the group.
Yeah.
You don't want to be at the front. You get picked off. You don't want to be at the back because something will happen and no one will realize it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, somebody ahead of the front of the group said, oh, we should start asking them to come out. And she was like, we shouldn't be asking anything to come out. And then you hear another voice that's not anybody, this man saying, yes.
That was on the tape?
That's on the tape. And then... when they got to some other destination, they're all laughing and talking and everything, and that's all on tape, and you can hear them all talking and giggling and making a ruckus. And then you heard a low growl that was like, children, quiet. That's all on tape, too.
That's crazy.
Right. And so they said they did group pictures. Mm-hmm. Like, they always take
Was there someone else in the picture?
They take two pictures. They do, like, these befores and afters in the same spot, you know, to do the picture. And when they looked at the picture, right next to her, there was a 7-foot-tall purple man.
What the shit?
Yeah, exactly. So she found out during these little jaunts out as a teen that she was a magnet for this kind of, for things to come.
I'll be not inviting her to my party. I don't even know if I wanted to come in the studio.
So, yeah. And so she had somebody else who was like a shaman invited her, this is a separate time, to go out and investigate a vortex that was opening up.
Okay. What, next Thursday?
Yeah, basically there's certain times and places where different vortex to the other
was
side
Was it a soft
open.
Opening? We didn't really tell anybody about it. It was just kind of like a pop-up vortex. Yeah. You just got to know.
Basically.
Yeah, you just have to know.
Yeah, and and so he made a special knife out of a deer antler.
None of this is good.
He's like, hold it in your left hand because left is for defense. If that's your non-dominant hand, it's for defense. And for your right hand, it means that
attack. Yeah. That makes sense.
So he's like, look, since you're a child of light, as he called her, things are going to be attracted to you. The good is going to be attracted to you, but also the bad. So things might come out and they're going to check you out. And then if we have to go, just do what I say. If I say go, we go.
Okay.
And that's it. And if anything happens,
Book it.
Get in the car, lock the doors, and don't.
So, I mean, really, how is that going to stop?
I know.
The angry demons that are going to be like, she's in the Chevy, forget it.
And she made it and locked
the
door.
Yeah, boys. And she locked the door. Forget it.
So they get to the vortex, which was shown by, like, this fairy circle, which is like a circle of mushrooms or flowers or something. And they're there, and it was quiet. And then just out of the woods came a pure white deer. And it came, and it looked at her and checked her out.
No.
And then the guy was like, we gotta go.
Yeah, get in the car. See, this is the thing about these paranormal investigations. Yeah, yeah. Like, if you see anything, it's over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you can, the moment that something is spotted, you gotta get out of there. So they never really get a chance to do the full investigation.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, like, the deer shows up and they're like, see ya.
Yeah.
They wanna see what else is coming?
No.
That's it. So like, why are they out there? Like, if they book it every time something happens, they're never gonna see anything.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, so she was good. She was telling that story. And then, and also with the recording, when they were walking, this is, again, back to the story with the purple man. Oof. When they were walking across the parking lot to their cars, she was still recording, but she was walking alongside the grass, too, that had a lot of, like, it was autumn, so there were crunchy leaves and stuff. So you could hear her footfalls, her boots on the pavement, and then you hear somebody walking in the leaves right next to her. There was nobody there.
That's creepy. All right.
True story.
I hope this guest is able to join us one day.
Yeah.
So speaking of vortexes, or was it vortices?
Vortices. Okay.
Apparently, this past July, a time warp was discovered outside Las Vegas.
That, really?
By a paranormal investigator.
I remember.
It's a self-proclaimed paranormal researcher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
they aren't they all?
It's somebody, paranormal investigator.
There's no certificates.
No.
You don't get one.
Everyone is a self-proclaimed whatever it is that they do. He claims to have discovered a time warp on the outskirts of Las Vegas, which he says slows down time.
Slows it down? Or
but
is he
not
just
very
bored?
Much. Yeah. The times suck. The bizarre claim gives a whole new meaning to the notion of a lost weekend in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Wah, wah, wah. So the researcher's name's Joshua Warren, and he told the news that he had tested several areas between Las Vegas and Area 51, but only found a reading in one area, though slightly north of Las Vegas, between I-15 and Route 93. It said the weird thing, this is a quote, the real holy grail was that we picked it up with this brand new piece of technology called a DT meter. It's a differential time rate meter. And it's brand new. I looked on eBay. You can get one for like $800.
Okay.
The one I saw was sold out, mm-hmm. but it's there. It's a device with a 100-foot cable with sensors at one end. And according to, I guess, the manufacturer or whatever, the device sends a signal down the length of a cable and measures the time it takes to reach the other end. Hmm. And apparently the rate of
travel along
is,
this...
Yeah, is supposed to be uniform
okay.
throughout. But if the vortex or the time warp area, it slowed down by 20 microseconds. Which is not very much at all. Like, we can't really tell.
Yeah.
But that's, and that, so that's how much slower that particular area is.
Wow.
It's just 20 microseconds slower.
Slower. Okay. So what does that mean for us?
Well, they're saying it's, first of all, it contradicts the laws of physics. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's, I guess, exciting. And it said it shouldn't happen unless there's some kind of unknown technology being tested nearby that would influence the environment. Or if there are naturally places around planet Earth. I love when people say planet mm-hmm. Earth. Around planet Earth that actually sort of flicker once in a while that warp time a little bit.
Isn't it just maybe that the machine wasn't working right?
Yeah. Wind blew.
Yeah.
I don't know. Warren said that it was interesting that the time anomaly, he's calling it, was recorded in this area, which is a popular UFO hotspot. Mm-hmm. So the question is not whether we have these anomalies or not. So obviously there's like time warps.
Yeah.
Right? Let's not even get into that.
Okay, like fine. Let's accept a time warp.
But is it a time warp or is it like something secret, you know, man-made device that's being used in the area that's throwing time off?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it extraterrestrial?
Okay.
So what is the nature of this time warp outside of Las Vegas?
Mm.
So bizarre. It's a differential time rate meter. It doesn't sound like a very good way to measure time.
It doesn't.
It seems like it's measuring, like, movement.
Right. It's kind of like, I know that they measure distances between things with sound.
Yeah.
By throwing off a sound and seeing how it travels.
Or with light.
Yeah.
You know, but with this, I don't know.
I don't know. I would have to say that I kind of...
I mean, I also, if you're going to make a case for time warps, I need, like, it needs to be big, there's got to be lights, and things need to really slow down,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
like, in a way that I can see.
Right, right.
You know, so, like, it's like, for example, like, I go into a time warp, I come out, you're 60.
Yes, yes.
I'm still the age I am. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, got to be that kind of thing.
Well, then the only thing that we can really do with those spots, and when we find them, is to make, like, a spa.
Yeah, over it.
Yeah, and just being like, come here and be rejuvenated. Or, and it's like, oh, I'm younger than everybody else.
I'm 20 nanoseconds or microseconds younger than I was.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at me. I want the time warp to be kind of thing where you throw a puppy in and a dog comes out.
Right.
You know, like something that's a little more dynamic than 20 microseconds slower.
Yeah, that doesn't really do anything.
It's not helping me. No. I feel like this is like a Nicolas Cage movie. There was a movie with Nicolas Cage where he could see into the future, but it was only like 60 seconds or something.
Oh, God. It's like, what can you do?
A tiny amount. Like, I can see 5 minutes into the future.
Yeah. It's like, well... Yeah, if you could see 5 minutes into the future.
Useless. I tell you 5 minutes from now, we will be discussing another story.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah.
About the paranormal. Anyway, so what do you have? So we're really excited to have in the studio, back in the studio, Tara Teresa Hill, ghost story writer and author, and she is the author of a new volume called The Spirit Hour.
Yes, welcome
back
to the Hey You Know It studio.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us about what you've been doing lately. So the last time you were here, you had a smaller pamphlet that was The Spirit Hour, and The Spirit Hour is your blog. Is that correct?
No, it's a ghost post.
Ghost post. Okay. Yeah. So tell us what you're doing now.
Well, right now, I'm taking a little break from the Ghost Post. I still have it. I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't been posting regularly so much because I'm working on a novel, which I'm really trying to finish. It's a full-length ghost story novel. I really don't want to go into too much detail about what it's about, but it's definitely long, so it's taking its time. I don't really want to talk about that one.
Okay, so no problem. A lot of authors do that, by the way. When you're working on something, you don't really like to talk about it until it's done. So you're right in good company.
I meant more about this volume one, The Spirit Hour, which I just got. So I ran into Tara Teresa Hill the first time at Trek Conderoga, which is a smaller Star Trek convention in Ticonderoga. And then I saw her again this year there, and she had this volume one, The Spirit Hour, which is five stories. And it's a little bit different than what you were doing before.
The Spirit Hour is a collection of fictional ghost stories. My blog, The Ghost Post, is dedicated to true paranormal encounters or hauntings that either I've experienced or people tell me about, and I write about it, as long as they've given me permission, of course. But The Spirit Hour is more my take on, what spirits are like as characters. So you get to hear about their past lives, their afterlife, how maybe relatives are around after they pass away, how they're around the family and everything. It's just my take on what's going on behind the scenes that we don't get to see.
Okay.
As far as the spirit life. So, The Spirit Hour.
Now, does that take away some of the scary factor if you
Me. I found it to be scary.
Okay. But if you because sometimes when it's like, oh, here's a ghost, there's like this dude standing there, it's a ghost or whatever. But now he was a minor.
Well,
he had five kids. It was something like that. It's like, oh, okay. So it kind of does something different, but is it still like...
Well, I try to, I try to do a combination. I try to think, okay, what it goes into a classic ghost story. You have the haunting, you might have some elements like the lights will flicker at a weird time, or maybe you'll hear something, or you'll see someone, and then you don't see them later. I try to keep in mind the classic elements of a ghost story. How I'm writing them, and this is why I'm writing them this way, is when I was a little girl and I would read ghost stories, I would get scared.
Yeah.
And I'd say, I want to enjoy the atmospheric part of the ghost story, like the house or, what have you, or the mystery. I don't want to get terrified. I don't want to be up late at night going, oh, my God, I can't sleep now. I'm worried the Wraith is going to come through my closet and kill me. I don't want that. So I said, I'm trying to go for making them more human. Like, what would they be like? That's how it's basically my philosophy on ghosts. They were human. They once lived, not going on like into religion or anything, but I'm saying they once lived, they're now dead, this is their character, this is who they were.
Okay.
And that's what I like to go
with. That's fascinating. Yeah. I really like that.
So the story that I was just reading here again on the way, it's called The Blue Lady, and on the back it says a retelling of the classic hitchhiker ghost story from the spirit's perspective. So for people who may not know, what's like the classic hitchhiker ghost story?
Classic hitchhiker ghost story, I mean, I've heard a bunch of different ones, but basically it's the idea of you meet someone on the road, you offer to take them somewhere, like they might say, oh, I live at such and such house. Like there's a famous one about a man who meets a woman on the road, and she's in a long dress, and she looks upset, and she says, can you take me to, can you take me to my parents' house? It's down the block or a couple ways down the block or whatever. So he drives her, down the road. He takes her to the house, and she gets up to the door, and she disappears.
Okay.
And the idea is that she used to live there. He finds out from the people inside she used to live there, but she died on the way
there. She never made it.
Right, she never made it home.
So her spirit is trying to get...
Right.
Complete the journey.
It's always the spirit trying to either complete the journey, or there are ones where, like, one of my friends in the UK told me a story about, a little girl that would get into a car, and then, like, you think you're taking her somewhere, and she disappears, just like that.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a recording. Sometimes I wonder if it's, like, a recording where, like, it's not actually the spirit, and it's just that you're running into, like, this energy recording, or if it's actually the spirit in some cases. In my book, it's actually the spirit.
Okay.
So you mean, like, a recording, like, it's on a loop. That scenario is playing out, and if you come upon that loop,
you'll get caught into it.
So it's called a residual haunting, right? Yeah. It's just, like, kind of, like, help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope. Like a hologram,
over and over
like
again.
Right, there's no actual interaction. Like, your interaction with the spirit is all... based on what they would have said anyway to anyone else if they were there.
So you can't affect the outcome of it in any way. You're just along for the ride.
Right. Yeah. I mean, unless you hear, like, there are other stories where people break them out of it, but you know.
And then what happens?
Well, I mean, either the haunting resolves or sometimes it starts over. I mean, I remember I saw this movie. I don't know what it was called, but when I was growing up, it was funny. It was it's one of those dark comedies. I forget what it was called, but it was about this man. He goes to this, I think it was a Scottish castle,
mm-hmm.
and he gets caught up in a murder of a woman, and he stops it. And when he stops it, the whole haunting goes off, and now she's free to talk to him. The guy who killed her is like,
yeah, hey. What happened?
Yeah, what happened? They've been dead for so long.
Oh,
all
wow.
Of them.
Okay.
And so, and now, and he didn't like, he was apparently just like, he lost his temper and was drunk and killed her, but he didn't really, like, supposedly mean to. He ends up not being a bad guy. I'm like, I still don't like him.
But, yeah, well, with the reason.
It's really funny because what happens in the movie is somehow they do this weird, like, there's a spell on the castle where the ghosts come alive and become human. And then if the humans die, they switch and become the ghosts. So in the end, the man and his wife who weren't happy to begin with, she ends up dying and falling in love with the ghost that killed the other woman, and he falls in love with the woman. Yeah, I was like, this is a little weird. And she becomes alive, and so now the ghosts switch.
I'm gonna have to look for this movie.
Yeah,
it's really weird. It's like a.
Is it an American film?
I don't know if it is American. I think it was either Scottish or Irish. I can't remember. I saw it once as a kid, but I remember the part that there were some parts that freaked me out. One of them was she. He's like. The murderer ghost is courting the wife of the man, and she says, I love you. I don't know why she loves him. He's this uncouth guy.
Yeah.
Who's
killed his wife. But she fell in love with him. He's like, then be with me forever. And she goes to run to him, and she falls out the window.
Oh, because he's not...
Right,
yeah,
right. And he's like,
there.
Die,
this,
so
this
you can be
dark,
with me. Oh,
dark comedy.
That's
really... Yeah, it's really... But it ends up being... They both end up happy.
Is that that's another reason to fear a ghost, right?
What?
Because they can tell you to go run to them, and then it's a
or
cliff.
You can try to interact with them, and then
it's a trick.
There's nothing there.
Yeah, I've heard of stories like that, too. I've definitely read stories like that. And, you know, and I try to... What I actually try to do in my stories is I make the ghosts more physical a lot of times to the one person they're appearing
mm-hmm.
to. So, in other words... Maybe to everyone else, they're like smoke and mirrors, but to me, they're like, hey, like, you know, they can actually touch you and talk to you and whatever, and, you know.
You can interact with
them.
Yeah.
I make it more
cool.
Like.
So, in this story, the blue lady, because I don't want to give it away, but it's, I was enjoying it there. At the beginning, you're not sure. So, obviously, I know something is up because it's the spirit hour and I know you. But you're reading it and you're like, okay, what's going to happen? Is this person, is this the ghost? Is this the person? What's going to happen with the story? Is she going to be able to get to where she's going? And then you learn more and more about her life, and she's a very interesting character. But you said that there's a story behind the story.
I have always had very vivid dreams.
Mm-hmm.
There are times that my dreams feel different from other dreams that I've had. So I have sworn, and I have no actual proof, but I have sworn that there are times I dream of spirits coming to talk to me.
Okay.
Now, when it's someone who is in my family who's passed away, now obviously that might be that they're actually coming, or it might be that I'm just dreaming of them.
Okay.
But I usually get, again, a different sense of it when they come. Because I'll be like, oh yeah, you're dead. You know?
Right,
and I'll talk to them and like, yeah, hi honey, how are you? You know? Kind of like my aunt comes in or my grandfather or something. But in this dream, I remember we were just, it was just after I got married, and I was living in Yonkers, and in the dream, I woke up in the dream, and mm-hmm. there was a woman standing by my bed, and at first she terrified me,
mm-hmm.
really terrified me, and she said, no, don't be afraid, I need your help.
Oh.
And
so
I
was she,
like,
was her appearance frightening, or just the fact that she was there and you didn't know who she was?
Well, in the dream, it was like, this is a ghost coming, you know, and it, for the moment, the first time I saw her, she terrified me. But then, right after she said that, and she gave me her hands, she, like, offered me her hands, and I got up out of bed in the dream, she suddenly became, like, how I describe her in the book, very nice, very sweet and everything, and I felt like, oh, she's very diva, you know, very, you know, very personable, and, so, I don't remember all of the dream. I don't remember what I talked to her about, per se. But I knew that she had passed away, so I knew she was dead. And then I saw, and this is the one thing that I put in the book, I saw how she died. Now, I'm not going to say, because I want people to read it. I saw how she died.
Wow.
And I remember seeing it and going, wow, that is really specific.
So, you saw it through her eyes, or as if you were
watching
it?
As if I was watching it happen.
Wow.
That's fascinating.
And so when I woke up, I remembered the car, like how the car looked. I'm not saying it was 100% sure what it was, but I remember the make of it. I remember what I saw, and I said, I'm going to write this down. And you know what? I think this will make a good story.
And it does, people.
Okay. So, and that's what I do. So, like, if I get an idea, and, like, if I, even if I have, like, a dream or a spirit comes to me, or I think a spirit's coming to me, I end up saying, all right, well, you know what? I might spin that into a story. I don't promise, but I do. But what's funny is every time I was writing that story the first time around, I would sometimes feel like she walked into the room occasionally.
Really?
Which was weird.
Wow.
And
so
I was even
checking on you.
Had moved yeah. at that point. I would, and sometimes I would get this eerie feeling like, okay, should I stop? No, wait, she's probably here to help, so let me
yeah,
just do it.
Yeah, make for historical accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
So, but it's a great story. So this is, it says volume one, so
yeah.
more volumes coming?
Oh, definitely. I love writing short ghost stories. I mean, I love writing a novel, too, but I love writing short ghost stories. They make for, I think it's like almost, you know, a really good medium for them. But I tend to make my stories a bit longer than most magazines want.
Okay.
So that's why I'm publishing them myself, because I tend to be more towards 5,000, 8,000 words. Maybe, you know, whatever the story needs is what I do, and I can't stand having to cut it down
to fit
yeah.
somebody
to
else's
fit form
constraints.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you have to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're doing it that way, then,
yeah.
instead of, like, saying...
So how did you find the process of putting your book together? Did you have a lot of stories and you had to cut it down to just pick a few? Is there a particular theme?
Well, I didn't want to go with a huge, you know, I was trying at first, I said, well, maybe I'll go for the theme of, like, ancestral spirits or spirits in hell, you know, I was trying to cut them into that, but then I said, you know what, that's too specific, let's just make, like, it's like a whole bunch of different stories about, you know, spirits working together with humans, so I either do it from the spirit's perspective, or I do it from the human interacting with the spirit,
mm.
that's how I tend to do my stories, and, basically, these were the stories I'd worked on for a while. I had them ready. I have other stories I'm working on, but I didn't want to rush to finish them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't like to rush things. It's one of the things, you know, I really dislike in some of, like, another reason why I don't really love contests and things like that is you try to, I find out about a contest a month before it's due. I have
mm-hmm.
a month to write a story. And then I have to make sure it's in there, you know, what they want, and I have to cut it down. And I like to give myself time to reflect. Because there are times you write a draft and you think, oh, that's it. You know, it's done. And then you go back and you're like, oh, my God, what was I? You start, like,
yeah,
rubbing
yeah,
your head
yeah,
and thinking,
yeah.
what was I thinking? I did that with one of the stories in there where I wrote the ending. It was The Reawakening. I wrote it, and originally the way I wrote it, I thought it was more like a, I want to say a happy ending. And then I reread it, and I said, oh, no, no.
It's
this doesn't
not
work.
A happy
this
ending at
work.
All.
And so I rewrote it again. So, you know, I think I like to have time to really flesh things out, and that's probably why I'm taking so long on the book.
Yeah, well, that happens. That's your process. And,
yeah.
you know, some every writer has a different process.
Yeah, I don't think there's any benefit to rushing.
Yeah.
I don't
think
so
in its own time.
I checked out your social media, and you have something called the Paranormal Hotspot.
Yeah, the Paranormal Hotspot was actually, it was a group I started on
mm-hmm.
Facebook because I wanted to give people a place to promote and share things that interested them about the paranormal, about ghosts, about hauntings, about, you know, anything. I even say go ahead, do aliens, you know, anything that you're interested
okay.
in. Yeah, no, because here's the thing. On Facebook, a lot of the groups I'm in, and I love them, they're wonderful, but they don't want you to sell.
Okay.
So put up your blog, but don't put up your book, you know,
okay.
and yeah, your blog may have the link to your book, but don't put up your book.
So you can't sell directly through.
Well, you
that
can't
way.
Even say I have a book.
I don't like that. That's something I want to know.
Well, I mean,
you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, no. I understand why, because a lot of times those groups become, then everybody's just going, here, buy my stuff, buy
I mean,
my stuff, buy my stuff.
As long as it's not aggressive, but if I'm interested in what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about,
yeah.
then I'm going to be like, hey, do you have a book, or do you have something, you know?
I mean, I basically started so that everybody would have a place. I said, I want, you know, the Paranormal Investigators, if you want to share your group.
Are they on there?
Some of them are. I mean, yeah, some people
gotta get on here.
Say when their events are.
yeah.
You know, they'll,
yeah.
They'll post their events. I say, share your book, share your art, you know. So other authors have started putting their books up there. I mean, I'm trying to grow it. you know, by adding people or inviting people, I'm starting to promote it more in those groups, because there are other paranormal groups that say you could post your group. So now I'm like, hey, by the way, I have this group where you can actually sell stuff. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Come find it. Not only books, but you sell actual things. Like there was a vampire kill kit.
Really? You said that? Yeah. Vampire kill kit. I missed that one. I gotta go back.
That was the first thing I saw. Of course. And it said, yes, it was used.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So what was in it?
It was a kill kit.
Garlic, steak.
It was like, I can't remember exactly, but it was like almost like a briefcasey thing that opened and it had instruments
inside.
All
the things you would
need. Oh my god, that's amazing.
To dispatch
yes,
with a vampire.
There and, you know, different stuff too. So I was like, is this like a kind of, like a like an eBay for paranormal stuff?
I mean, if that's what people want, I mean, I post articles. I post articles that I find. I post other people that I find. But yeah, basically, you can sell anything as long as it's related to the paranormal. I've seen people post, like they make or they find mugs that say spooky things. Like like you know, like I can't think of them now, of course, but you know, something spooky about it, like about ghost hunting or
like
something.
Like, I'm scary before coffee.
Yes, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're a natural.
I'm scary before coffee.
And it's like a little, like a monster with that, like.
Yeah, see, that's perfect. Like anything they want, they could sell their books, their art, you know, because there are plenty of artists that just love, like, you know, people make haunted dolls.
Oh,
and I'm not talking about like the real haunted dolls. I'm talking about like they just make creepy looking dolls.
In my mind, Katie and I have a thing
about
dolls.
Yeah.
When I was at Ticonderoga, I stayed at a wonderful bed and breakfast.
Aww.
But there were a lot of dolls in the room, and
oh,
I actually had to cover them with things that I put a shirt over one. I put like a doily over another because they had it was a house that it had a lot of. You know, a couple of generations of family had lived in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in a lot of B&Bs, this is why people like them. And I'd never seen anyone before. There are a lot of personal effects of the family.
Yeah.
People who've been in that room, the grandmother, grandchildren, all this kind of stuff. But the dolls, for me, it was too much.
Mm-hmm.
They were the porcelain ones with the very realistic face, very realistic hair, and kind of Victorian period. And I just felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so I turned a few away. And then some I just draped. I draped nicely. I draped a cloth over them.
Yeah.
Because I just, dolls, I can't.
Yeah, what about you and dolls? What about Annabelle? What do you think?
Oh, no. I don't even like to read. I honestly try not to read about the stuff about, like, demonic possession and things like that. Not saying that I don't necessarily put that stuff in books or in my stories. I don't throw them out. But I don't let myself read it too much because I'm one of those people. I'll be up in the middle of the night and be like, oh, my God. What if the doll looked at me funny?
Exactly.
Yeah. I can't. It won't bother me. It won't bother me when I read it. Mm-mm. It'll bother me when I'm in bed trying to go to sleep.
I didn't know that I would have that reaction to these dolls.
But I did.
And then I was sleeping. So we were in a room on the top floor, and it was all wood paneling.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a hatch going up from our room to what I must assume is some kind of attic.
Oh, no.
Or crawl space.
No.
And that plus the dolls. I woke up in the middle of the night because I swore that I heard an unsheathing of a knife. I just woke up.
You
might
heard,
like, shing. And I was like, you know what?
Why? Why do you
I'm going to go back to sleep.
You might have. No, because when I met with people last year, not so much I didn't get to talk to people this year about, but people that lived in Ticonderoga that have had family houses, yeah, they're all haunted.
I wouldn't be surprised. A lot happened there.
A lot of them are haunted. So.
In Ticonderoga. A lot of action in the earlier part of our country's history was happening in Ticonderoga. It was really weird. I've never had that experience before. And I told my husband about it, and he was like, he just kind of took it in stride. Because it felt like there was a lot that had happened
mm-hmm.
in that area. In that room, in the property. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't scared the entire time.
I get scared.
You know,
I turn on the light a lot. Not a lot. Well,
my attitude
I'm not afraid
is,
to turn on the light at night when I'm trying.
When you're
scared.
Freaked out.
Yeah.
My thing, I don't turn. I just say, you know what? If you're going to do something, bring it. I'm not going to waste my evening being scared. Let's have it. Let's go. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Nothing. All right, moving on. Because what can you do?
Yeah, it's true.
I don't have any weaponry. Like, I have no way to combat it. So you were at Ticonderoga again
mm-hmm.
this year. I was sadly not able to get there in time for your session. But how did it go? What did you do? What was your session based on this year?
I basically just talked to Guy. I told more ghost stories
okay.
about what I've experienced and things like that. And I sometimes, like, I feel... I sometimes wonder, like, I'm wondering for next year, should I try to make it more, you know, organized and try to, I have an idea in my head, but I'm thinking, I don't know, because then I get too, you know, uptight about, like, trying to make it, like almost like a lesson, like, trying to teach people. And I was never comfortable being a teacher. I tried.
I mean, it depends. So the session that I went to, you told some stories, and then it kind of naturally led itself to people telling their own stories, which I thought was really interesting. People felt comfortable to talk about experiences that they had. It was kind of a discussion, which is great because it was a smaller group. But as you keep doing it, I think it's bigger and bigger.
Yeah, there was a... it was a small group because a lot of people, I think they had another, they had one of the really famous ones, I think Gates, was it?
During your slot.
It's Star Trek. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm like, wow, they're amazing. You know, I want to go. instead? You know, no, but there was a paranormal investigator there, so I definitely wanted to make sure, like, he had done paranormal investigating.
Who came to your session?
Yeah, oh, so cool. I wanted to make sure, I was like, okay, let me make sure I throw these words in there so he doesn't think I'm a nut. He doesn't think, you know, that I'd show him I know my stuff. And he actually was really nice, and we talked and everything, and I'm going to interview him later. So
that's awesome. I wish I had been able to be there. Have you ever been involved in any paranormal investigations?
I mean, the only official one was the Pennhurst one I talked about last year. But, I mean, unofficially, no. I mean, unofficially, yeah, but officially, no. I've never really gotten involved in a group or anything. Part of me feels like that's not, like, maybe my own spirit guides that say that's not for me to constantly open myself up to that kind of thing. Not only that, but I was actually saying this during the talk, you know, it depends on where you go to investigate. If you go to, like, a nice preserved manor, you know, like, you know, a haunted manor or something, then that's different. But if you end up having to investigate a house that has, like, you know, like, it's falling apart, it's got mold, it's got dust.
There's other dangers besides spirits.
It's more dangerous than the spirits.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you get, like, you know, sinus infections, things like that. And since I'm prone, I'm like, let me just not, you know.
So you're not going, it's like the house itself.
The house itself.
I'm afraid of a sinus
because
infection.
Sometimes you see, like, when on TV they go into these houses, and I'm like, I'm afraid you're going to fall through the floor.
That was the problem with Pennhurst for me. I got very sick afterwards because we were in the woods, and there was all the broken stuff and everything on the ground. I was like, okay, I know some people would be totally fine. I know what's going to happen to me after this. I have a bad feeling. And sure enough, I got a cold. And when I went to my doctor, they said, what did you do?
You don't know what's in there.
Right.
You know, people are going to old jails and places like this. You don't know what chemicals are in there, what off-gassing is happening, like what, you know.
What dust is in the air. What dust has crumbled in there, mold, and getting into as your you lungs, said, the like mold. You're saying.
You know?
Yeah, I never really thought about that part of it. That
you don't until you're surrounded by it. Because the thing is, my dad has always done like construction and handiwork and stuff like that. And so I'm sitting there and I'm looking at all the broken tiles and stuff. And I'm thinking,
asbestos.
My dad would be in here with a mask and like his head covered. I'm thinking, you were so stupid.
Yeah, they should be wearing hazmat suits when they go into places like that because you don't know.
I mean, it was so much fun. I really loved it. I enjoyed it. But I said to myself, you know, maybe, like, I would prefer, like a Victorian manor or something. I think I'm more like that. Like, you know, like
Merchant House downtown. Something that's preserved, historic.
I've been there. I love that house. Or the Winchester place, if I ever could get to go, which is really, you know,
right, the Winchester house.
The mystery house.
That keeps being, that's endlessly built, right?
Endlessly built, and it's, like, room upon room. People actually I've heard of people getting lost in there if you don't stay on the tour.
Oh, really?
That would freak me out.
Yeah.
Oh, if I got into a room and could get out, I don't know what I would do. If it's one of the things where you have to, like, move a book to open something.
I'd start screaming,
help! Immediately.
Probably the ghost would come in like, stupid, you were supposed to stay with the tour.
Stay with the tour.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. I always think of you now because of where I'm working at the Mount.
I
pass by some of those buildings and they're quite interesting. I feel like there's something to some of the older buildings. They have like a character to them of their own that some of the newer construction just doesn't really have. Because nothing has taken, well, I'm assuming nothing has taken place, but, you know, not a lot of things have taken place over a long period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did see a ghost or a spirit in the one of the newer buildings in the Mount once.
Was it a contemporary ghost?
Yeah, I think so. Because I thought she was, when I saw her, I took her to be, like, just anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, she had, I did note that there were bell bottoms, but you know,
it's around, still kind of contemporary.
Right, when I went to school, that it even just finished being a fad.
Yeah.
I had some. So I'm like, so you know, to me, that was like nothing. And then, like, suddenly, when she disappeared, I was like, well, guess it wasn't a person. Well, I mean, it was a person, but not a living person then. So that was a weird one. But I only saw the spirits at the mount when it was empty.
Mm.
I didn't really experience them when I was, like, when all the students were around.
Yeah, when the semester was in full swing.
Yeah, it was when it was empty.
Oh.
But I think, though, the campus is so busy, I think it would be hard to tell, maybe.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing so many, people, you know, students in every nook and cranny.
One time a professor walked down the hall, one of the nuns, walked down the hall in the old-fashioned the old-fashioned Sister of Charity garb.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was in a classroom, and I saw her walk by, and I went, I did this face, and I came out, and she turned, and she stopped. She kept walking, then stopped, like, really, like, freeze frame, then turned around, and, like, boo! And I, like, jumped out of the skin.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm not a ghost, silly. I'm just wearing the old garb. It's Founders Day.
Yeah.
You don't see that there. They're very modern. The nuns are wearing like a pantsuit.
She knew, though, that I would react that way.
That's funny.
Awesome.
I said, sister, you gave me a fright. She said, you're alive. Isn't it wonderful? And so am I, at least for now. I love the Sisters of Charity. They were darlings.
They're very nice people. But yeah, you don't see traditional habits anymore.
Mm.
It just doesn't fit in with what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not practical.
It's not practical.
No.
Pantsuit.
It must
much
be
more
hot.
Practical.
Could you imagine wearing that?
No.
But also, too, you gotta clean it. It's probably, I know how I am when I wear a dress or something with sleeves. It's like I'm getting it into everything, and it's a nightmare. It just isn't really practical.
Yeah, and the life of a nun. I went to Catholic school, and they told us what it was really like. And they get up at, like, 4 a.m., and then wash the steps, and they have chores, and they pray.
So you want to be
and
comfortable.
They do a lot of physical work.
Wow, God bless them.
Yeah, plus they're teaching, too, and that also isn't very practical for teaching.
Yeah.
If you're writing on the board and, doing things and moving around, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I love, that was part of the reason why I fell in love with the mount, was the history of the place. Just when I walked onto the campus and I felt that beautiful energy, and I said, I want to come here.
It's a nice campus and has a nice view. It's on the water.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful and very well landscaped.
Yeah, I just fell in love with it.
So you're working on a volume 2?
Yeah, well, I have a bunch of stories that they're all in different stages. Because what usually ends up happening is, at least so far with the novel, what I like to do is I actually like to write a short story until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then let it sit and then go back to it. But what happens lately with the novel is I would get pulled away back into the novel. So I'm like, I want to finish the novel first and then I'll go back. But I have about another... I'm probably going to do 5 a book. Again, my story
I think this is a good size.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I think,
can't wait to dig into this. Thank you so much for my copy.
And I think...
I have a signed copy, listeners.
I do as well. I think also these would be really good for a read aloud.
Mm-hmm.
So if not, maybe not the entire story, but like, I don't know. I feel like I would like to hear these aloud.
Okay.
In addition to reading them. I'm not making a request. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it would be interesting to do an audio, maybe an audio book of it at some point. They are, although I get nervous reading. I don't know.
Oh, you can always hire somebody to do it.
Yeah.
It would have to be someone else because I would say, no, wait, I said that wrong. Let me do it again.
Because that was when, growing up in Maryland, and, we have Edgar Allan Poe as like our number one guy. And it was great to read.
Yeah.
But it was also really nice to sit around and have somebody kind of bring the story to life.
Oh, I love that.
For you. Because, you make your own associations, but just to be able to sit back and enjoy and hear someone else read it, I think for the stories in here would be really cool as well.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind, definitely.
So do you have any events coming up if people are looking to see you or interact with you? How can they find you online or...
Well, online, I'm Tara Teresa Hill, a ghost story writer and author. That's my Facebook page. There's the Ghost Post at ghostpost.co.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Paranormal Hotspot, if you find that on Facebook, it's called the Paranormal Hotspot, the market for all things paranormal.
Okay.
I click... You want to be added, and I'll look at it, and I'll say, "Oh, okay, they're the right person. Let's just add them in." But yeah, that's a great way to find me. Events I'm looking for, I think there's a couple places I'm gonna try to get vendor booths for, but there's nothing solid yet, so I can't say for sure. But I am looking for different places to do more vendor booths and talk to people everything. And whenever you see me at a place, if you do happen to see me, if you just want to chat about ghosts, that's fine. I love sitting and talking with people and sharing ghost stories or listening to yours. I prefer to listen to yours. I mean, I could tell you mine, but I prefer to listen to yours. So, you know.
Okay. Ooh. Excellent.
Well, yeah, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I love coming to talk to you guys.
Oh, awesome. It's great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Hey You Know It with Jaquetta Sotmari and
Katie Kazmir.
We're telling you how it is and how it should be.
I have here. All right, so Halloween is here.
Mm-hmm. It's upon us.
It's upon us. And this is the time of year where the veil between the living and the other side
is thin.
Is thin as all get out.
It's easily pierced. You can see right through it.
Wispy.
Gossamer.
Yes. And so a lot of people at this time of year like to try to commune with spirits. And there's some do's and don'ts.
Oh, yeah. It's etiquette.
Get your etiquette down here. Okay, here's some the do's and don'ts for those who dabble.
Casual summoner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do use equipment. If you don't have any, use your cell phone to video and take pictures. But what we have learned, you shouldn't use your cell phone and take pictures. You should be using, the Memorex tapes. Yeah. Tape recorder.
You should go old school.
Old school stuff, because it's easier to capture things.
They like film. They look better on film.
Okay.
Digital is not their medium.
Right. No duck faces.
Yeah.
With the spirits. Okay. Do protect your own energy by putting a white light of protection around yourself.
Okay. How do I do that?
Just be like, I have white light around me.
Okay.
Fine. So you go, I guess you're supposed to imagine like white light all around you protecting you.
Okay.
And seal it in.
Seal it in.
Yeah, just like any stranger, use caution. Ghosts can be deceitful. They can. They can lie.
Yeah.
If they want to.
True.
They're not bound to any kind of moral code.
That's right. They're otherworldly, so they can do whatever they want.
They can say whatever.
They can definitely leave the door open when they come in.
Yeah. They can
leave bowls out.
Yeah.
With food in them. Doesn't matter.
Toilet seat up.
Yeah.
They don't care.
They don't care.
Do realize they might be asking for help. Stay calm.
I don't have time for that. Imagine, I have enough of my own problems, lady.
Imagine how you would feel if every time you approached someone, they screamed and ran away. It's kind of...
But you're a ghost. Stretch.
You're a ghost, yeah. And it's kind of scary. Even the most secure ghosts can develop a complex and over time resent the living for not helping them.
And then that's when the shit starts.
Yeah. So be gentle.
Be gentle, yeah. Don't turn it.
Be kind. Life can be tough on any astral plane.
It's hard out there for a ghost pimp, is what they're saying.
Okay. Do light a candle and sage your space before and after.
Okay.
Let's see.
That seems like a basic thing. I think most people know about that. Saging a place out.
I don't know. I mean, like, did you grow up knowing about sage?
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, because no one in my family is a pagan or has any kind of, you know, beliefs that we would put more on the spiritual or new mm-hmm. age. But yeah, it's just the thing of like, you would always see, you know, the sage like tied up when you were kids, but you weren't really sure
what it was for. Okay. I only encountered sage the first time I had a roommate after mm-hmm. we got robbed. She was like, I'm saging this place out. She's running around with the sage.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? And she'd explain.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think back, but I don't remember a time when I didn't know about it.
Mm.
You know, I didn't see it in people. Maybe in the country, people were using the sage as like a potpourri or something like that. Or maybe it's like, you know, when you have cedar in your closet or something like that. But yeah, people always had these little like bundle of, you know, sage just tied up.
Yeah, because sage, when you burn sage, it's supposed to energetically clear the space any kind of, and just kind of make it neutral and bring in the positive again. But also they're finding that the smoke itself from the sage is also like an antibacterial. So it really does kill microbes and things in the air.
Maybe
so,
that's why I would see it in people's houses. Maybe people are like, you know, it's kind of like where you put lavender with mm-hmm. your clothing to keep moths away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it has some other, like a purpose that is not, you know, for paranormal.
Right. So it's just like after you get sick.
Yeah.
And you're on the mend and you clean your place, you sage it out to get rid of
everything
else. Yeah,
open up all the windows and burn the sage.
Okay. But back here with the ghost. Do be assertive and set clear boundaries.
Okay.
Yes, this is my space. This is my space.
You see the white light?
Yeah.
You stay over there.
I got a white protective light. Don't even come
near.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Boundaries. I don't know you like that.
Do not engage with any entity who has physically caused harm or gives you the creeps. An entity does not have to be evil to be a jerk.
Is that what it says?
Yeah. So it doesn't mean that they're evil. They're just some people are jerks.
Inconsiderate.
Yeah.
You know.
Do not be afraid. All ghosts feed off of energy. Fear will draw the benevolent to you like a shark is drawn to blood in the ocean. They can smell it from far, far away.
So don't be vulnerable.
Right.
When you're around ghosts.
Right. No fear.
No fear.
Yeah. Because isn't that the thing, like, you see in the movies, like, ghosts are...
They feed off of it.
Well, they do just, like, little tiny things at first in the house, like, in any ghost, like...
Because I interpret that as, like, they're trying to gather, so they don't have enough energy to, like, fling the doors open and move furniture around, but for now, they're just gonna, like... You know, lift up a napkin.
Yeah, and so then you start getting scared. Mm-hmm. And so it takes more. That energy, and then it does something bigger and bigger and bigger. So every time it even just does a little thing, your fear is feeding it.
Huh. All right. I'll go with that. That's what they eat for breakfast. I eat fear for breakfast.
Yeah, right. Do not use a Ouija board or have a seance unless you really know what you're doing.
You mean it.
Yeah. Do not, if you don't know, you don't know who you're inviting in. Negative entities are not easy to get rid of. They are energy thieves and will take all of yours if they are allowed. So they will take all your energy.
What are they doing with this energy? Oh, I guess growing stronger, mm-hmm. right? Or maybe are they trying to, like, manifest a physical form? Because I feel like in a lot of horror stories, that's, like you said, they start off doing something small and they feed off the fear, but then eventually they need more.
Yeah.
Because they want to get back into the human realm. And in order to do that, they need the ultimate, you know, someone to make the ultimate sacrifice, which is...
Like a possession.
Their life energy.
Yeah. So they want to get in your body.
Yeah. And take your energy.
Yeah. And it says, don't go into graveyards to try to raise the dead. Just don't do it. It's wrong.
I mean, yeah. Although graveyards... There's some very beautiful graveyards around New York City.
Yeah.
Like in upstate that are just a night. It's kind of like, I mean, maybe it's a little morbid, but it's like a park.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, it's peaceful.
It's quiet.
And pay your respects, but don't try to get anybody
don't
to
try
do
to
anything.
Bother anybody.
Yeah.
So I found this thing here about dogs and the paranormal. So a lot of people think that dogs can see ghosts or they have like they can have abilities to tell when there's something going on in the environment that's negative, or they can smell the death and all this kind of stuff, like impending doom. So the article says it's not just around Halloween, but year-round people have this idea that dogs can see ghosts or spirits. So what is it that's actually happening? Some people believe that dogs can see the angel of death.
Oh.
I know, which is just the worst way to put anything. In other words, they're just saying they know when someone's about to die.
Just because they put the word angel in front of something doesn't soften it.
No, the angel of death.
The angel of car repossession.
The angel of despair.
The angel of credit card debt.
Yeah.
It's not an angel.
Sounds good. So according to Psychology Today, some of the anecdotes are, so... A person whose dog doesn't bark or howl all of a sudden becomes very agitated and starts barking and howling, and then you find out that your neighbor has passed away.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, clearly, the dog saw the angel of death and was like, yo, it's coming. Oh, no, I went next door.
Yeah.
People think that dogs are sensitive to places associated with death, so that dogs, if they're in a spot where someone has died or something terrible has happened, they may start growling, whimpering, or refuse to keep walking, and some people think that they can sense the spirit that was there, so like the residue of what happened is there. Or the dog just is being ornery, senses that something is going on. A lot of people believe that dogs are in tune with the spirit world, or they just have some precognition that allows them to anticipate ominous events, and not just from the distant past. This persists today. So a lot of people think that animals can tell when there's going to be a natural disaster, but I think that's true.
Yeah, I think so. Because they have a different sense of, yeah.
And they would want to flee. Mm-hmm. But, like, you're there, mm-hmm. and now they can't. It's like, ordinarily, they would get the hell out of town.
Yeah.
Because there's an earthquake coming or a tsunami or, you know, whatever. But, you know, they're with you, so it's just kind of like, well,
fine,
I'll be here. Man's best friend, right? Man's best friend.
I'm going to stick it out.
Sticking it out.
Maybe this human knows.
They also say that a lot of people believe that dogs are trying to warn their owners when something's about to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get that car. Or, like, don't answer the door, mm-hmm. because the dog senses something. But the reality of it is that they can sense, well, they can smell something like 1,000 to 10,000 times more than we can. Yeah. So they can actually tell if someone's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a possibility that maybe they could sense.
Like ghost BO.
Yeah. Or just the delivery guy.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed that my dog knows when where the delivery guy is in the building before I even know. So, like, before the bell is rung or anything, my dog is like, all right, there's Chinese food on the way.
Well, but it's also a thing, like,
they can smell it.
They can smell it, and they're so much more, their sense of smell and hearing is so much more powerful than us. But just think of it, when you're, like, alone in the building, you know when somebody comes in, mm-hmm. you can hear, like, the little click, you hear a door, you hear all kinds
you're
of things.
You're more attuned to it because your senses are heightened.
Yeah, you know exactly who's where.
Yeah, what's
who's
moving
home,
around. Yeah.
What's going on. And
you may also be transmitting that information without realizing it to your pet. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then your pet sees that you are agitated or have a sense that something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And they kind of pick up on that because they're very sympathetic mm-hmm. to humans. So they found that if you yawn, your dog will yawn. Mm-hmm. Like in sympathy with you.
I was years ago, I was out in Colorado and I was staying in my cousin's cabin. And boy, you know, it was the middle of the night, and I woke up because I thought I heard somebody walking outside the cabin. It's in the middle of nowhere. Nowhere. Ugh. And I was like, there's nothing. I probably was dreaming. And there was, you know, there was the German Shepherd in the there. And I saw the dog just looking at the wall. And I was
not
like,
good.
And so I went. I was like, I'm going to sit next to this dog.
The dog's like, what are you doing?
I was like, I felt better next to the dog. I was just like, I need to sit here because I don't know what's there because it was totally silent. And then I saw somebody walk by the window and the dog was
tracking.
Yeah. Yeah. What was going on? And I was just like, so the dog knew too.
Yeah.
And but it turned out to be my cousin's ex-boyfriend.
Okay. Not
spying.
Too, yeah, not sinister.
Not bad,
yeah.
But bad enough.
But the dog, I mean, then that's why you have that dog there. Because mm-hmm. the dog is more, so it's interesting, so that not only the dog is paying attention, but the dog is also trying to let you know, like, hey, there's something going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
they could probably pay attention in a more, like, a relaxed manner. Mm-hmm. But it's like letting, and then you sat next to it.
Yeah.
Also at attention.
Yes. Yeah, but I was like, it was the difference between me not really being half asleep and going, oh, I didn't really hear anything. I was just sleeping and then seeing the dog.
Yeah, was the like, two things together. It's like, yeah. okay, there's some, and then there was somebody there. Supposedly, there's evidence that dogs can see ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of videos on YouTube you can check out of dogs reacting to ghosts or spirits, but you can't see the ghost. Someone's mm-hmm. just saying that my dog is acting strangely. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's because they sense the presence of a ghost. It says a lot of the times it's just that dogs have, you know, higher developed senses than we do, and they can feel mm-hmm. that something is going on. Although they can tell when you're sick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can they?
Yeah. A dog can tell if you're sick because apparently they can. You give off some kind of pheromone or scent that they can tell
off,
that something is wrong. But that makes sense because dogs should be able to tell if they're sick or if a fellow dog or another, mm-hmm. or another animal is sick.
Yeah.
Especially if you have like a dog that hunts. You should know before you attack another animal like that if you're going to eat it or whatever, if it's healthy or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So maybe that's a part of it as well. And then also dogs can see, they can't just see better than we do, but they also see, more of the ultraviolet spectrum of light, which we can't see at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they're seeing things that we have no awareness of.
Right. Oh. Okay.
And who knows what it is that, what information they're getting. I always find that bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
that there are things that we just can't see because our eyes aren't able to pick it up, aren't able to capture the light. So it's like, how much stuff are we not seeing?
That's really interesting because I read a thing about the Mothman.
Ooh.
Yeah, so
that keeps coming around.
Yeah, it's this man with wings, almost like a moth man.
Yes, hence the name Mothman. But that what does he represent?
He appears as just kind of a. He doesn't do anything. He's not causing any trouble, and he's not evil, so to speak. But when he appears, that means that disaster is going to occur. Oh. So it's kind of a forewarning, kind of a thing that there will be a big disaster. And I think it was spotted down in. New Jersey.
Before an accident. Pleasant,
and then in West Virginia, too. And when everybody in town starts seeing him, they know something big is going to happen. And but they didn't realize it at the time they put it together. Then there was they saw it in one town, and then there was a big bridge collapse.
Yeah.
And all the cars fell into the river, and a lot of people died.
I think starring Richard Gere.
Yeah. You're right. Yes. And Deborah Messing.
But
this article just to people who were examining the cases of the Mothman, trying to figure out exactly what happened, writing what their findings were, and they were just saying that the way that people's perceptions, our eyes are not great, our hearing is not great, our sense of perception is not good as living creatures on this earth.
Yeah.
And that there are so many more animals who can do it so much better than we can. So what we're seeing as reality around us, we're missing a ton.
A lot. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And we don't even know. So in some cases, some light spectrums, we figured out that it's out there. Mm-hmm. And we found, you know, we've created devices to kind of show us those different spectrum. But there may be things out there that we don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't see it. We don't have an idea about it. And we haven't even thought about making some device to be able to see it.
Yeah.
But I find that it's weird.
Yeah. So there's this whole, like, all around us could be swirling this whole other reality.
Yeah.
That is there, but we can't see it. Because it's like the equivalent of us being, like, half blind.
And as long as it doesn't come into physical contact with us.
Yeah, in our way that we can
perceive
it.
That we can understand, yeah. Then.
It's fine. But sometimes it slips through.
Hmm.
And that's why you get all these different sightings and these different ideas and reports. Yeah,
I know that when I was growing up, that moths were considered to be a sign of death. So if there were moths in your house, then someone was going to die.
Oh, okay.
And also we were told never to kill a moth.
Really?
And I still, to this day, even though I'm not, I feel like I'm not superstitious, but I still, when there's a moth in my apartment, I always trap it and I let it out the window. I would never kill a moth.
Yeah, I don't kill anything now.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid,
you never know. You never know. So I have a tale here about the Bell Witch. Do you know about this one?
The Bell Witch, yes.
Yes. I knew about it just from, you know, films, TV, and whatever.
Right.
But I didn't know what the actual story was.
Oh, let's...
So it says...
Scary one.
What if you were... Okay, well, what if you were vengeful and utterly unrestricted by the veil between the physical and the next dimension? That's exactly what Kate Batts had going for her. She was a spiteful woman who believed that she had been cheated in a land purchase by John Bell and was hell-bent on tormenting him, his children, or at least his favorite 12-year-old daughter, Betsy. So the genesis of the Bell Witch is like a real estate deal gone bad.
Yeah.
Like someone got screwed in a real estate deal.
God.
On her deathbed, Kate, this is the Bell Witch, vowed to haunt the family of the Bells who had done her wrong. After death, she made good on her promise. It felt to the Bell family that this ghost took no other pleasure than tormenting them incessantly. So the Bell Witch would pinch their noses, poke needles at them.
Oh, God.
Throw kitchen objects around and then screech in her notorious high-pitched voice. Pull hair, and she was a presence that they could not get away from.
Oh,
no matter
God.
What.
So wherever they moved.
Doesn't matter.
It was.
Her wrath was particularly directed at John and his favorite daughter, Betsy. With the wife and the other children, she was sometimes heard crooning softly and saying something pleasant,
mm-hmm.
or just ignoring them. But she really focused in on John Bell and then his daughter. So she would mentally and physically torture them with a shrieking voice, so they would hear the high-pitched voice. wherever they went.
Oh, my God.
Screeching all the time. So during the time of the story, it was all Andrew Jackson was not the president of the United States yet. He was just a general at that point. But apparently he heard about the story, and he got together with a couple of his friends, and they went down there to ghost hunt.
Oh, really? See?
Yeah, to check
it out.
What
am I telling you? Down south?
Yeah. So they get there. They're in their wagons, and then when they get there on a flat road, and they're talking about the witch, like, ah, we're going to do this, we're going to find it, this is going to be or whatever, and then they can't get the carriage to move, no matter what. So the horses... They whipped the horses. They refused to move. They couldn't get going. And then he just said, by the eternal, boys, it's the witch. And then their carriage started up again.
Wow.
So when they went there to check out what was going on, they stayed at the family's house. And the bed covers were pulled off of them. The men claimed that they were pinched and poked, just like what was happening with the family. And then they the next morning, they just got up and they were like, F it.
Like
they got out of there.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. And then October of 1830, John Bell was rumored to have suffered a stroke and taken ill. While he was bedridden, his family found him in a particularly bad state. Alarmed, his son ran to the medicine cabinet to fetch what he thought was the father's medicine. After administering it, the family heard the witch's glee as she victoriously declared she'd poisoned John herself the night before with the vial and the last dose of it. Was surely is undoing. And they found out later that whatever was supposed to be his medicine was actually poisoned.
No kidding. Wow.
So this is one of the few cases where a poltergeist has actually caused death.
Wow.
Because usually they just, it's like haunting, terrorizing. But this is one in which they say the ghost actually was able to do somebody in. So this is the Bell, the Bell Witch. All I know about the Bell Witch is that shrieking.
Yeah. I've seen part of the movie, and I'm like, I don't want to watch it anymore. It's scary.
It's very scary, the idea of it.
Yeah.
All right, what do you have?
Okay, I have a tale.
All right, cool.
Let's see. About 10 years ago, I was visiting my dad at his house. I was about 8. My stepmother was in the kitchen, and I was in the family room. We both saw my father wearing a red flannel shirt and blue jeans walk around the corner of the living room and start to walk up the stairs. I followed him and called his name as he went up the stairs. He turned back and looked at me, got to the top of the stairs, and went around the corner. I called his name again. Then from the living room, my dad popped his head up over the couch and asked what I wanted. He had been asleep on the couch the entire time, yet both my stepmother and I clearly saw him wearing the clothes he had on the whole day, go from the living room and up the stairs.
What is that?
It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. Both my stepmother and I still remember it and talk about it to this day. And it was also in broad daylight. So it wasn't like...
An illusion of some kind.
Yeah.
Or shadows. What do you think that is? Is it what's going to happen? Is it something that's happened in the past?
I don't know.
Is it a doppelganger?
Or is it an entity that is getting the energy to replace somebody?
Who knows?
And then, like, if they can replace the look of somebody and interact with people as that person, it gets more and more energy.
Do you think it was like... Fuck it, I'm gonna walk up the stairs. That worked. They bought it. They went for it.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's scary.
So
it was just like two people saw it, and they both thought it was that a human
was doing it, and it was a very banal action.
Yeah,
like it. I mean, that's not really like a haunting kind of thing. It's like someone going upstairs.
Yeah,
I don't like that. So I looked this up. Can you die of fright?
Okay.
Yeah, the answer is you can.
Really?
Apparently. So, it's in the season of ghosts and goblins and other things that go bump in the night, and why most people are just, become frightened and they either get a thrill out of it or it's Molly Disturbing for them. Apparently, if you're overwhelmed by fear, your fight or flight response jumps in and you have a burst of adrenaline, and that can kill you.
Oh, wow.
So, it overwhelms the nervous system. The heart rate shoots up, the pupils are dilated, increased blood to the flow to the muscles, and then if there's too much adrenaline, it can damage your heart.
Oh, wow.
So if a person is scared, a large amount of adrenaline reaching the heart, you can develop an arrhythmia called ventricular fibrillation, an uncoordinated contraction of the heart that makes it quiver and not beat regularly as it should. So basically you stress the heart out. And it's not just with fear. It can be anything. So if you're too happy.
Oh, really?
During sexual intercourse. Because we hear these stories every once in a while. Like, yeah, someone's having some really good over. Sex, and then boom. Religious fervor can also kill you.
Really?
And also people get really excited when their team wins, and that can kill you as well.
So just it's best to just be like, meh, yeah, about everything. About right?
everything.
Not too excited, not too depressed.
Also loud sounds, like a sonic boom, and a horrible smell can kill you as well.
Oh, well, yeah, we all know that. Yeah. I mean, or you feel like you're dying.
Yeah. This is silent but deadly.
Yeah.
It's true. Said once more, a person who scares people, also known as a scaremonger.
Yeah.
A scaremonger can be held legally accountable if you scare someone to death.
Good.
I always think about that when I see this, like, prank shows. I'm like, I wonder if anyone actually, like, goes into, like, cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
You know? And if they did, they'd be liable. Said someone, in May, an insurance company agreed to pay a $300,000 settlement concerning an 85-year-old man who died after his vehicle hit a tractor trailer. The man's family alleged that the tractor trailer didn't have backlights on, and the man was scared to death when he suddenly noticed there was a vehicle in front of him.
Oh.
Right? So he hit the tractor trailer moments later because he had a heart attack.
Oh.
So the next time you want to scare someone, be careful, because you might be held responsible for it.
Yeah. And it's also a mean thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, why is that a pleasurable thing to, like, scare somebody?
I don't know. That's why, like I said, that so my the news cycle has gotten so bad now at the bodega. They don't even have news on anymore. They just have True TV. And there are a lot of, like, practical
jokes on it.
But they're elaborate. They're really elaborate practical jokes. And I hate to be a wet blanket, but I'm like, this is what you guys are doing?
Yeah.
With your resources?
I know. Oh, no. But it's like the
elaborate.
I think that when we're kids and we scare each other, it's funny to see the reaction because somebody jumps or makes a noise. And it's like kind of like an unexpected silly thing. And you're laughing at that kind of reaction.
Yeah.
But as you get older, it's like, no, you're really scaring somebody.
Yeah.
It's
like
not cool.
Especially when they're... So they had one where this guy was playing some kind of virtual reality game. And there was like a freaky doll in it.
Okay.
And it was surround, like full virtual reality. So they had him sitting in this room, and then while he was playing the game, and he had headphones in, so he couldn't, you know, hear what was going around, they replaced everything in the room that he was in with replicas of what was in the game.
Oh.
So that when he took off his virtual reality headset, it would seem like he was still
in the game. Ew, that's messing with somebody's sense of reality in a way that's...
I didn't, you know, I got my coffee and left. So I didn't see the rest of the guy's reaction to it, but like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Weird. I don't know why that's even a prank.
It's like, again, to see the reaction.
Yeah, like, so it'd be like if we...
So he's confused?
When we leave the studio, if we, you know, open up the door and instead of it being Funkadelic, it's like, I don't know, the Magic Kingdom or something out there.
Like, what the heck? It's confusing.
Ah. Gotcha.
Oh.
You know, good Disney one. World.
You sure tricked me on that
one. But I mean, I wonder something like that, because the game was scary. Mm-hmm. I wonder something like that could potentially frighten someone to death.
Yeah, it could. Well, you know, watch yourselves, people.
I guess,
No more pranks.
No more. Keep it small.
I have one. This is about the Whistler.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay, so this guy's saying, a young man in Lansing, Michigan hears a strange two-tone whistle that seems to come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, the incident has...
Two-tone?
I was like, really, a whistle, a two-tone whistle? Wait till I get to it. Oddly enough, this incident was repeated at random intervals throughout his life and always left him with a feeling of intense dread. The last time he heard the sound, he managed to take a video of the whistler, though he is still no closer to figuring out who or what seems to be watching and following him wherever he goes. And so the man says, we saw a figure steering a canoe about 20 meters offshore. Sarah decided to go get some more beers from the car, leaving me alone to stare at this mystery person. And then, of course, they whistled at me. My entire body was frozen and covered with goosebumps. It was the exact same whistler from my childhood, more than a decade earlier. I looked at the figure, but it was much too dark to discern who it could be. They were wearing a hat. Then, when they were perpendicular to the shore from me, they stopped paddling, turned the canoe to face directly at me, and whistled right at me.
Hell no!
I was so frightened, I stood up and shouted at him, "Who are you?" They didn't say anything, just whistled a couple more times.
Show yourself!
turned the canoe 180 degrees and paddled out of sight.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it's like this. So they showed the footage, and you can't really see anything. You see, like, it's like sunset, basically. Mm-hmm. So you can't really see who's in the water. You can't really see the boat either, but you hear the whistle, and it's like, I can't do the whistle, but it's like,
Oh!
That's the tone.
So it's kind of... It's kind of like a
taunting, like, yeah. Like a menacing.
That's creepy.
So he's been hearing this whistle and seeing like this
throughout
figure
his life.
Throughout his life.
That's very scary.
That's creepy as, I was just like, this.
I know, because when you said two-tone whistle, I was like, oh, like what do you mean?
Yeah.
You know. Wow.
And imagine hearing that and seeing somebody that is like, following you around.
Just looking at you.
And you don't even know when they're going to appear.
That's creepy. I don't like, there was I was in 59th Street. They have a passageway where the subway station is. And, you know, there's like a food court there. Mm-hmm. And it's nice. You can sit down, there are tables, whatever. It's very, very busy. So I'm just sitting there and I felt like someone was staring at mm-hmm. me. Which is weird because it's such a busy place. And, of course, it's New York. Everyone's looking at everybody. Mm-hmm. This is how it is in a city. You check to see, oh, she looks interesting. Nice shoes. Like, oh, look at that. You know, you just look around because you try to be aware of your surroundings. I swear. And I look up and there's this dude, really tall, thin black guy, like at least 6.5 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
In a really nice suit. But it was weird because, you know, when you see people's clothing, you have kind of an idea like where maybe they mm-hmm, got it or what. Mm-hmm. But it was like, it was weird. It was monochromatic. And he just looked at me and then he walked away. So I, of course, you know, when you make contact with somebody, mm-hmm. then, you know, go back to what you're doing. But I looked away. I looked back up. I looked around. He was fucking gone.
Really?
Like, I was like, it was so bizarre.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it made me feel very uneasy.
Maybe that's weird. What if you saw something from like a vortex?
I have no idea.
Another thing,
but you know what I mean. I just had a weird feeling of like I felt uncomfortable, and I never feel like that. I didn't think the guy was menacing me.
Yeah, but it was something very
like he
off.
Was going to sell me some insurance or something like that. I mean, you know, because he was dressed in a way that it was like he was clearly professional, mm-hmm. but something about his manner was off. And then when I looked around, I couldn't find him anywhere in the place. I was like, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get on the A train and take my ass home.
Yeah.
It was just weird.
That is really weird. That is so strange. Maybe because the way... All right, let's think about this, why you felt uneasy. There are things that you pick up from people and places and things, and you may not necessarily be able to, like, say, he was just a bit too tall, or there was something, or maybe he was sick, or maybe there... Like, you couldn't...
I couldn't figure it out.
You couldn't
There's
put your
nothing...
finger on this combination of factors about him that made you uneasy.
Like, if I took taken a picture of the guy and showed it to you, you'd be like, oh, it's just like a good-looking professional brother. Mm-hmm. But there was something, I don't know, something was totally off. The suit color was weird. Mm-hmm. He was strange-looking. His manner was really weird. And I felt as if, like, he had been looking at me for longer than
is customary. Yeah.
And so then when I looked up, he just kind of was like, he didn't avert his gaze, which is usually what happens. If you're looking at someone and, you know, you have...
They look up and then you just...
Yeah, there's like a... We know how long it is we can look at another person like, without it being weird. But it was just weird.
Even weird in a way that it was like he was just inappropriate. It was just something
I didn't feel like, you know, that it was going to try to like grab a boob or something. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that kind of... The look wasn't that kind of... Mm-hmm. There was no lasciviousness mm-hmm. to it. But it was just kind of, like, strange. And I just mm-hmm. remember feeling like, you know, I just gathered up my stuff. Mm-hmm. Closed up my little vegan mac and cheese.
And you're like, I'm
out of here.
Oh,
I know.
God,
it was strange.
So scary.
And on that note, good luck.
Okay, happy Halloween.
Yeah. Bring him the fuck up! Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com. with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise, and let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at HeyYouKnowIt.com. Thanks.